Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. At present, it is overcast, 43 degrees Fahrenheit here in Kodiak for today. Rain with a high near 45, an east wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. For tonight, rain mainly before 10 p.m., a low around 40, north wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming west after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 80%. Saturday, a slight chance of rain before 1 p.m., then showers likely, mainly after 4 p.m. Partly sunny, with a high near 48, a west wind around 5 miles per hour becoming calm. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Saturday night, showers likely, mainly before 7 p.m., mostly cloudy, with a low around 39. Calm wind. Chance of precipitation is 60%. For Sunday, mostly sunny, with a high near 48, calm wind. And Sunday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 40. A south wind around 5 miles per hour. Looking into the next week, Monday, partly sunny, with a high near 53. Monday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 41. Tuesday, mostly sunny, with a high near 53. Tuesday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 41. Wednesday, a chance of showers, mostly sunny, with a high near 52. And Wednesday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, with a low around 42.
News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. There's a new member of the House Republican leadership, New York's Elise Stefanik, and her message is the congressional GOP is in lockstep with former President Donald Trump.
I want to thank President Trump for his support. He is a critical part of our Republican team.
Trump, whose Save America PAC has amassed $85 million, lobbied top House GOP leaders to remove Wyoming's Liz Cheney, leading ultimately to the events of this week. Trump backed Stefanik, who supported his false claims that President Biden's November victory was the result of a rigged election. The head of the National Security Agency, General Paul Nakasone, says the ransomware attack on a major pipeline illustrates the growing online threat facing the country. As NPR's Greg Myrie reports, Nakasone says the attacks are coming from both foreign countries and cyber criminals.
General Nakasone told a House committee that cybersecurity is national security. The NSA chief said U.S. adversaries, both governments and criminals, are becoming more sophisticated and increasingly brazen in their attacks. He cited three types of attacks that are most common.
They are looking to steal our intellectual property, steal our personal identification, and they're looking to conduct interference and influence operations either against our electoral processes or within our economy.
President Biden issued a lengthy executive order Wednesday that outlines a series of measures intended to strengthen cybersecurity. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Washington.
Eight Yankees players, coaches, and staff members who are fully vaccinated against COVID-19 have tested positive for the virus. NPR's Amy Held reports as more Americans get vaccinated, it's raising questions about what these breakthrough cases mean.
The Yankees say one of the players to test positive, Gleyber Torres, not only already had COVID-19 during the offseason, but is also fully vaccinated. It's unknown how common such breakthrough cases are, but the CDC says some are to be expected. No vaccine offers 100% protection. Still, the agency says vaccination will protect most people from getting sick. And that appears to be the case among the Yankees, according to Dr. Imran Ali, a New York City area physician.
All of them are asymptomatic. And the point of the vaccine is to help teach our immune systems to help protect us from a virus. I think the Johnson & Johnson vaccine worked really well in this case.
Also this week, HBO announced TV host Bill Maher tested positive, despite being fully vaccinated and is feeling fine. Amy Held, NPR News.
The UK's COVID vaccine program has been one of the most efficient in the world, but there are fresh concerns now about a fast-spreading COVID-19 variant first identified in India. Wall Street approaching the close, the Dow was up 360 points. This is NPR.
A pair of resolutions are being put to see Alaska shareholders that boosters say would reform how Southeast Alaska's regional native corporation elects its leaders. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, it's part of an effort to boost the voices of independent shareholders.
Sea Alaska is a major economic player. Its business portfolio includes seafood, real estate, and until recently timber across more than 360,000 acres in Southeast Alaska. The native-owned corporation reported nearly $700 million in annual revenue, with more than $55 million in net profits last year. At next month's annual meeting, 5 seats are in play on the corporation's 13-member board, and candidates are seeking support from the more than 22,000 people holding shares. Of shareholders that vote, about a fifth don't mark any preference.
If a shareholder is undecided who to vote for, but they still want to be supportive of Sea Alaska, there's an opportunity to give their votes to the proxy holders to vote as they wish.
That's Ed Thomas, who sat on the Sea Alaska board for more than 2 decades. He says these unmarked ballots are called discretionary because they can be voted at the discretion of the board majority. It's basically like handing over an unmarked ballot for a corporation's leadership to ink in the bubbles. But Thomas says this block of votes can be used as a tool by the board majority to keep control of the corporation. He says any board member that's out of step with the majority risks losing their endorsement, and with that, access to the pool of discretionary votes controlled by the majority.
Bad. And what that does is sends a message to any new member that you got to go along with their thinking, otherwise you can't think independently, otherwise you're out.
But Sea Alaska's board majority opposes the measure. Board and executive leaders declined an interview request, but have released statements pointing out that past efforts to stamp out discretionary voting have failed. It's not the only election reform resolution put on the ballot by shareholders. Anchorage shareholder Lisa Marie Ikonomov is pushing a separate measure that would require more detailed reporting of the final vote count. That means a candidate's election returns would have the number of directed votes cast by individual shareholders and the discretionary votes controlled by the majority on the board in separate columns.
This resolution does not say that they can't use discretionary voting. What it says is they just need to be honest and truthful about the reporting and report those full totals to shareholders. They shouldn't be able to hide any vote count from any shareholder.
It's a somewhat Byzantine process, but Ikonomov explains how the current setup allows the majority on the board to prop up their allies who may not receive as much support from individual shareholders. She offers this hypothetical.
So you can have a situation where, let's say, they need 500,000 votes to get on the board, and that person only got 100,000 directed votes, which isn't a very good showing. And I don't think a very good show of confidence from the shareholder population. And so what the proxy holders can do with those discretionary is they can say, okay, he needs 500,000 to get elected. So we're going to give that candidate those 400,000 votes from the discretionary pool. And so that will get them reelected.
Sea Alaska is one of the 13 original corporations established by the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The legislation was a sea change for Alaska's indigenous people who received shares in regional, village, and urban corporations based on ties to their traditional homelands. But Ikonomov says ANCSA corporations like Sea Alaska have in the past half century become a lot more than just profit-driven corporations. They also serve as representatives for broader interests of Native peoples.
They're our voice in politics. They're our voice, you know, in the community. We look at those positions as not just having that business component, but also in a lot of ways, you know, the representation component of us as shareholders, as tribal citizens, as just Alaska Native people.
Sea Alaska's board of directors opposes both shareholder resolutions. In a statement to shareholders, the board says roughly one-fifth of people vote discretionary because they are consciously showing their support for the corporation. The resolution faces tough odds. Under Sea Alaska's bylaws, a shareholder resolution requires support from the majority of all shareholders to pass. That's especially difficult because 20 to 30% of shareholders don't vote, meaning that two-thirds of those that do would need to vote yes. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
RVs provide a more COVID-safe way to travel, but the pandemic has increased demand for them at the same time it's backed up manufacture of motorhomes, travel trailers, and other mobile camping gear. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, it's difficult to buy or rent an RV in Alaska these days.
Long a popular way to explore Alaska, RVs are an especially hot commodity in the 49th state right now. Oscar Ingold at Arctic RV in Fairbanks says the business has exploded.
Last year, we sold every unit that we got in, and we actually could have sold more if we could have got them. This year, it's no different. Matter of fact, it's probably worse. Right now, we've got 32 units on order, and we can't even get them in. They haven't been able to deliver them because they're backlogged on making them and delivering them.
Ingold points to an Alaska-specific pandemic-related factor driving up demand.
Because there's not as many tourists, a lot of the locals are wanting to go out and enjoy some of the sites without the crowdedness of some of the more common areas like Valdez.
In the past, an online search could turn up plenty of used RVs for sale, but Ingold says that's no longer the case.
We've got people coming in every day looking for either new or used units, which we don't have. And basically anything they find on Marketplace or Craigslist, if it's anything at all, if they hesitate, it's gone before they even have a chance to go look at it.
The rental market is also tight. Steve Spencer and his wife started Alaska Road Adventures, a small-scale RV rental business in Fairbanks 2 years ago. And he says things have really taken off during the pandemic.
Because of the COVID, we expected it to be down. It was actually up because it was a good way for people to travel and kind of stay isolated and so forth. It was mostly in-state people that we rented to. This summer, it's both in-state and out-of-state, and it's exponentially stronger.
Spencer says the two motorhomes they have rent for about $250 each a day and are booked for all but a few weeks through September. He says they plan to expand the rental fleet as soon as they can get additional units. Alaska is normally a magnet for RVers driving up from outside, but the U.S.-Canada border closure has shut down that traffic, leaving only one real option for getting a motorhome north: shipping it.
We run a twice-weekly service between Tacoma, Washington, and Anchorage, Alaska.
Alex Hofling is vice president and Alaska general manager for Tote Alaska, a marine cargo shipping company. Hofling says Tote has long shipped RVs north, but started marketing the service more to the public last summer.
Our goal was to raise awareness of the capabilities of Tote and that, you know, Alaska is still a really good destination.
Hofling says they moved more than 100 RVs last summer and hope to double that this year. He says it costs about $4,000 to ship a 30-foot RV to Alaska and about half that to ship it back. Drivers and passengers have to fly. In Fairbanks, Dan Bross.
The U.S. Senate passed a bill Thursday that could allow cruise ships to return to Alaska ports this summer. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
The bill temporarily lifts the required stop in Canada for foreign cruise ships, which comprise nearly the entire fleet. It passed in a largely empty chamber.
Madam President, I ask unanimous consent that the Murkowski Amendment at the desk be agreed to and the bill as amended be considered read a third time.
Is there objection?
Senator Lisa Murkowski says if all goes well, the cruise lines could return to Alaska in mid or late July.
We have to hope that they still view this as an opportunity and that people still want to come and travel to Alaska for the latter half of that season.
The bill must pass the House, and Murkowski says the Alaska delegation is still working on the Centers for Disease Control to amend its pandemic restrictions on cruise ships. The Senate-passed bill adds a temporary bypass to the Passenger Vessel Services Act. That's a 19th-century law intended to favor domestic fleets. It says a foreign vessel can't carry passengers between U.S. ports. Foreign-flagged cruise ships get around it by making a stop in Canada on voyages between Washington State and Alaska. Last year, with the pandemic raging, Canada stopped allowing it. There's a lot of work ahead if Alaska is going to salvage part of its cruise season, and it's not entirely in Washington, D.C. Murkowski predicts a scramble in Alaska port towns for workers and shop inventory.
There's been so many moving pieces here that we've had to kind of cobble together, and I'm feeling much better today than I have in weeks about the viability for a semblance of a cruise season this summer.
Murkowski says she's optimistic the bill can pass the House. The Alaska delegation has already quelled objections from senators who don't like protectionist laws like the Passenger Vessel Services Act, and with others who wanted to see concessions from the cruise industry to protect consumers. Some of that work should allay similar concerns held by House members. Reporting from Washington, D.C., I'm Liz Ruskin.
A local utilities cooperative in Bristol Bay has made a change to the 911 service for a small community near Dillingham. That ends the Dillingham Police Department's longstanding practice of fielding those 911 calls. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, rural residents report difficulties in summoning Alaska State Troopers in emergencies, and local officials no longer want to be caught in the middle.
Alaknagik is a small community 20 miles up the road from Bristol Bay's western hub of Dillingham. The city of around 200 residents has no local police. And when someone there calls 911, the person on the other end of the line can't offer direct help.
5 years ago, my daughter tried to call 911 and she was told to call another number.
Kay Andrews is Alaknagik's city administrator.
This was an emergency. She has no means to write down another number and then hang up the phone and call another number.
Dillingham Police Chief Dan Pascarillo says his officers don't have jurisdiction outside of city limits.
When an Alaknagik person calls 911, the Dillingham Police Department answers it, and then we would have to contact the Alaska State Troopers and provide the information secondhand to the trooper dispatch so they could dispatch a trooper, or we tell the people to hang up and call the dispatchers.
The police can't transfer a 911 call because the 911 system is separate from the public phone network. Some Alaknagik residents say that in a crisis, the way 911 works there is dangerous. So the Dillingham Police Department decided to streamline the system. In March, it announced that it wants 911 calls from Alaknagik to go directly to the troopers rather than having their officers pass on messages. Nishigat Cooperative, the local utility co-op, announced Thursday that it has already rerouted Alaknagik's 911 calls to the state troopers. The change came before Dillingham City Council's public hearing on whether to make the switch. Operations manager Trung Vo said the co-op decided to make the change after receiving complaints about emergency services in Alaknagik.
Nishigak was proactive for our members to at least get them some sort of better level of service by switching them over sooner, so they can dial directly to state troopers and get some sort of help and response right away.
Public safety in Alaknagik and across much of rural Alaska falls to the state. But unlike many other parts of the country, state officials don't have authority over the 911 system. Instead, it's a hybrid of local and regional centers. And while urban areas like Anchorage and Fairbanks have their own 911 dispatch centers, calls from many rural communities are transferred through multiple agencies. The state used to contract with local police in regional hubs like Dillingham to dispatch village public safety officers and Alaska State Troopers. But it largely dismantled that arrangement in 2016. That's when the city of Dillingham lost its annual $20,000 contract and the ability to dispatch state public safety officers. Trooper Captain Rick Roberts says several reasons led to that change. Cost cutting was one, but there were other issues too.
When we don't own or control the dispatch center that's taking the call, we were getting different levels of service among the different agencies that were answering our after-hours phone calls for us. And so troopers were getting inconsistent dispatch information. Sometimes it was very good. Sometimes it was not complete. Sometimes it was, hey, call this person with no other information. Other times it may have been a dispatcher or call taker at one of these other agencies that went the extra mile and got us a lot of information.
When the contract was canceled, Dillingham's local police lost the technical ability to dispatch state public safety officers in the wider region, even up the road in Alaknagik. But when people in Alaknagik called 911, the phone still rang in Dillingham. The two communities share the same phone prefix of 842, so calls weren't rerouted to the troopers in 2016. And many people didn't know anything had changed. Things came to a head in 2019. Alaknagik artist and small business owner Abayu Moore tried to call 911 when someone broke into her house in the middle of the night. Dillingham police told her to call the troopers directly. A trooper didn't arrive until the next morning.
You're not going to be getting help in any sort of timely fashion when the calls are being passed around to different people.
Moore spoke out about the failure of 911 and the slow trooper response at public meetings. Recently, she addressed a House committee on rural public safety.
To not be transferred in directly to the next possible safety option that I had. And instead, this guy is circling my house. And while someone is trying to get into my home, they're like, well, you need to call the troopers. And here's the number. And then I had to find a pen. Like, I had to find a pen and paper as I'm shaking and terrified, wondering what this person is here to do. And it was just a... sobering moment to realize how self-reliant I was going to have to be.
Moore's public discussion of her experience pushed local entities, including the Dillingham Police, to re-examine how they handle 911 calls from Aleknagik. Severing ties completely between Aleknagik residents and Dillingham Police means nobody will be asked to write down the trooper's phone number during an emergency. But it won't address a larger issue, the lack of law enforcement in small communities like Aleknagik. There's funding for a village public safety officer, but the VPSO job has been vacant for at least 3 years. Aleknagik City Administrator Andrews hopes establishing a direct 911 line to the troopers will be a first step towards better public safety for the community.
I think it's a ripe time to take advantage of bringing our 911 system to standard in the state.
Moore, the Aleknagik artist, hopes officials continue to work to improve public safety in communities like hers.
Maybe in a year, this conversation will bring it to something better. I don't expect it to get fixed in an instant, so it's good to know that people are working through the issue.
And she hopes that moving forward, people focus on prevention as part of the solution. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Plastics from fishing gear get turned into lumber in Cordova. More on coast-to-coast efforts after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Turning plastics from old fishing gear and marine debris into durable lumber is building momentum from coast to coast, and one Alaska entrepreneur plans to take it on the road. Patrick Simpson of Cordova received a $100,000 grant from the Environmental Protection Agency to develop a mobile plastic waste recycler. He told Alaska Public Media that the recycler would fit into one or two 40-foot container vans for easy transport to local communities.
The technology is not horribly difficult. It's been proven, and the innovation is the use of the net combined with the melted plastic to create an extruded recycled plastic lumber and the packaging into this mobile platform.
Along with old fishing gear, Simpson plans to focus on plastic waste materials that wash up on local coastlines. He hopes to gather the goods collected in community beach cleanups before it goes to the landfill. Plastic comes in many forms, and the kinds used in milk jugs or bottles is different from those used in nets or ropes.
The polyethylene and the polypropylene, and I'm melting those, and then I'm shredding net nylon and using it as a reinforcement, the fibers, to create a recycled plastic lumber, and then I'm going to sell that locally.
Simpson hopes to get a more sizable EPA grant and use drones to locate plastic debris on beaches. Elsewhere, Radio Canada reports that Goodwood Plastic Products in Nova Scotia has commercialized synthetic lumber made out of derelict fishing gear and other plastics using a nearly $500,000 grant from the government. It's part of a more than $8 million innovative solutions fund that includes fishermen and divers eager to help. Goodwood now employs 10 people and hopes to recycle more than 22 million pounds of plastics annually. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KMXT 100.1 FM, and it's time for the Island Messenger. Let's jump first into the weather. It is overcast, 43 degrees at present here in Kodiak. For this afternoon, rain with a high near 45. East wind of 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 90%. For tonight, rain mainly before 11 p.m., a low around 40, a north wind of 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming west after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 80%. For Saturday, a slight chance of rain before 2 p.m., then showers likely mainly after 5 p.m. Partly sunny with a high near 48, a west wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Saturday night, showers likely mainly before 8 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 39, a calm wind, and chance of precipitation at 60%. Sunday, mostly sunny, with a high near 48, with calm wind. And for Sunday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 40, a southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Coming into the beginning of next week, Monday, partly sunny, with a high near 53, Monday night, partly cloudy, with a low around 41. Looking at Homer, it is presently fair, 51 degrees Fahrenheit in Homer. For this afternoon, a 30% chance of rain after 4 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 50, calm wind becoming southeast around 5 miles per hour. For tonight, rain likely mainly after 10 p.m., mostly cloudy with a low around 40, calm wind becoming north around 5 miles per hour after midnight, chance of precipitation is 60%. And for tomorrow, Saturday, a 50% chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 48, calm wind becoming west around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. For Anchorage, a few clouds in the air, 56 degrees Fahrenheit. For this afternoon, sunny with a high near 57 and calm wind. For tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 42, a southeast wind of 10 to 20 miles per hour with gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. And for tomorrow in Anchorage, a 20% chance of showers after 1 p.m., mostly sunny, moving through mid-morning, then becoming cloudy with a high near 51, calm wind. Going to marine weather for Kodiak, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, a small craft advisory through tonight. Today, an east wind of 20 knots becoming southwest 25 knots in the afternoon. North of Dangerous Cape, east wind of 20 knots, seas to 6 feet with rain. For tonight, a southwest wind of 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. And for Saturday, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 7 feet. Saturday night, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 8 feet. And for Sunday, a variable wind of 10 knots, seas to 8 feet. In the Shelikof Strait, a small craft advisory today. Today, a northeast wind of 25 knots, seas to 6 feet with rain. For tonight, a south wind of 15 knots, seas to 4 feet. And Saturday, a southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Saturday night, southwest wind of 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. And Sunday through Tuesday, variable wind of 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. Synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will move northward across the Gulf today. A 1,007 millibar low will develop 115 nautical miles southeast of Seward Saturday morning. The low will then move 60 nautical miles southeast of Seward at 1,010 millibars Sunday morning. A front approaches the western Gulf Sunday morning. It is Friday, the 14th of May in this year of 2021. The sun rose today at 5:48 a.m. It will set tonight at 10:26 p.m. and rise again tomorrow morning at 5:46 a.m. That's 16 hours and 38 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 8 seconds. The record high was 74 degrees in 1942, and the record low was 28 degrees in 1965. For district tides, there is a low tide this morning at 10:24 a.m. of negative 0.67 feet, a high tide at 4:57 p.m. of 6.50 feet, a low tide at 10:05 p.m. of 2.82 feet, a high tide at 4:09 a.m. of 8.78 feet, a low tide at 11:01 a.m. of negative 0.44 feet. For the west side tides, a low tide at 10:52 a.m. of negative 1.19 feet, a high tide at 5:15 p.m. of 13.11 feet, a low tide at 10:58 p.m. of 3.44 feet, a high tide at 4:41 a.m. of 14.16 feet, and a low tide at 11:27 a.m. of negative 0.57 feet. Now for some community announcements. There will be a fishing vessel drill constructor class put on by AMSI and Alaska Sea Grant in Kodiak on Thursday, May 27th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and May 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center, 118 Trident Way. The cost for the class is $125 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. Register online at www.amsi.org or call 907-747-3287.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.